And so I found myself in a downward spiral of debauchery, endlessly chasing zombie takeout. What's up? Welcome to episode 316 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Moving Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, let's just get straight to this week's movie, which is from 2002, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. This is the second part of our two-part tribute to the late, great Chuck Barris. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Bullshit. Sometimes it's the foundation of a long career, and sometimes just an entertaining memoir.
And also brought to you by Bad. Bad for the U.S., not in an absolute sense. Alright, so we have a child from Philadelphia who, I guess just according to this, at least he obsesses over girls, leading him to, of course, a career in television.
Well, leading to an incredibly young start, for one thing.
Oh, so many people do have a very young start.
Oh, yeah, fair point.
I was not one of them, but I understand so many people do. It leads him to this career in television, but it has a kind of rocky start. And just as he's about to make progress in this career, though, he's approached by a gentleman from the CIA to become an assassin. All right, so he decides to take them up on this. He undergoes the basic training, and they send him off to different locales while he's still producing game shows. And I guess he's not, you know what? I thought he was hosting, but no, he was only producing the game show.
He didn't
show.
Host until the Gong Show, I don't think.
All right, you know, I was thinking, like, wouldn't it be weird if, like, the host of the show went off as the chaperone? Mm-hmm. Like, wouldn't that raise red flags? Yeah. But no, as a producer,
makes sense.
He's sent off as a chaperone and to, as a friend, of course, to pull off some missions. Some stuff gets pretty hairy on these missions. And then, of course, there's always a mole. And can you really have, like, a CIA spy story without a mole getting involved somehow?
Which is part of why I don't buy it, because it's too much of a story. it's paint by numbers, practically.
Of course, there's a process of elimination is not exactly a surprise who the mole is.
Right. I mean, I didn't get there until, like, the beginning of that scene. I wasn't sure, but...
But, I mean, that was the only person left. There was nobody else. Everybody else was dead.
I thought maybe it could be the girlfriend, but...
Oh, I know. Hilarity ensues.
Now, his rise to fame in his day job, the producing, seemed way too easy. Like, he gets a job as a page after, you know, walking away from a tour... And suddenly he's got a management job. It was just this ridiculously fast rise. Although the time jump with the page thing was nice. Yeah, he walks away from the tour, walks out of frame. Next thing you know, he's walking in frame as a page.
Yeah. Now, that, of course, I mean, that can all be documented.
Fair point. Yeah.
But then again, the truth doesn't seem to have gotten... Not necessarily embarrasses telling of the story, because I need to read this fucking book, by the way. This was written in 1984. And apparently Kaufman wrote his in, like, the late 90s.
Right, yeah.
And then Clooney did a lot of changes to it.
Yeah, I have some trivia about that. Scriptwriter Charlie Kaufman felt dissatisfied by the way Clooney treated his script. He commented, "I spent a lot of time working on the script, but Clooney wasn't interested in the things I was interested in. I've moved on, and I have no animosity toward him, but it's a film I don't really relate to." Clooney acknowledges that he made changes because there were quote-unquote funky scenes, that would never have gotten the green light from the studio. Apparently, there was also a drug addiction subplot that Barris asked to have removed for historical accuracy.
Well,
I mean, Barris did his share, I'm sure, but I don't think he was ever addicted.
True. He seemed like a bit of a health nut if you take, like, the, you know, the Gong Show movie seriously. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, him and Ed Marinaro, you know, competing against a former NFL football player.
Right.
But, yeah, the other thing is that Barris, in real life, was married up until 76.
Right.
Like, Barris was married, from what I found out, for it's like bestcomedyonline.net, was married from, like, the 50s. Up until 76.
And then he was also married, I found this out last week, from 80 to like 99 to the woman who played his wife in the Gong Show movie.
Right, who Drew Barrymore plays in this.
Okay, that's her, okay.
He called her Red a couple times in this, which is what, you know, kind of connected the two together. The other thing was, the really weird thing about this movie is they don't mention his daughter whatsoever. No. And that really was his daughter in the Gong Show movie. I looked it up. Della Barris died of an overdose in 98.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, she was born in 62 from that original marriage. So, in the Gong Show movie, she was about 17, 18 years old, you know, saying she was going to get married. Because the other thing I remember is from the Gong Show is Red and Della would sometimes do the introductions at the beginning of the show, you know, to introduce Chuck Barris.
Right. I've seen Della doing that. I've never seen Red.
Yeah. I mean, they showed like a clip of it in the Gong Show movie.
You know, I think that's where I saw Della, yeah.
Where Red refers to him as his roommate.
Okay. Yeah. You're right. I remember that now.
But they actually do get married in 80. But according to this, they still haven't gotten married and it's like 82.
Right. And he was holed up in the hotel room in the early 80s when he would have been married to her.
I think that was 82, I think they said.
He wrote the book in 84.
Right.
And he was holed up in that hotel room for years. I found a short interview with Barris about the movie, and actually more about the book, that I'm going to put in the show notes on the website. And he says he basically lived in that hotel room for like 5 years.
Really?
Yeah.
But that's while he was married to Red. Mm-hmm. According to this, they got, I mean, the movie, they got married after, you know, he was done with the hotel room. Because that's how they ended it. They ended it with the two of them getting married, which actually happened before all of this. So I don't know if it's Kaufman that did this or if it's Clooney that did it.
And honestly, and I don't mean this in any kind of disrespectful way, but I don't really believe anything Chuck has to say about it. I honestly think he was just trolling all of us.
Well, you could say he was either trolling. Some people say it's a metaphor or just that it's ironic that if he were killing people, he would be, you know, considered a hero.
Yeah.
But because he, you know, put people that weren't talented on TV, he's considered dangerous.
Peter Buck from REM, the guitarist, used to tell interviewers that his father used to play the Tight Oboe Man, just to fuck with them. I think this is Barris doing something similar. And I kind of take that as the whole book being Barris fucking with us.
But I'd really like to see a timeline. Did they really offer, you know, trips to West Berlin and Helsinki? Mm-hmm. I mean, what they could have played it off as, oh, you know, those are just low-budget trips.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it is really odd that they would offer that as a trip.
Right. Yeah.
In fact, the whole concept of an unmarried couple going on a date sponsored by a television show back in the late 60s, early 70s, just seems insane that they would even let that go through.
And from what I remember of that show, because I used to watch it back in the day, they went to like restaurants in New York and stuff, and occasionally, like, you know, the typical like tropical cruise. There weren't any odd trips that I remember.
Okay.
Oh, this just reminded me. We were talking about how we want to see the Gong Show come back. It's coming back.
Yeah.
Will Arnett is going to be the host.
Okay, I could see that.
I just found that out like the day after. I think it was actually the night after we recorded last week. I saw a clip on YouTube.
I'd heard it was coming back. I just did not hear who was hosting it.
Also, the Match game is back. I found that out a couple of days ago.
It's very odd. It's, you know, the problem with bringing it back. It's the
early 80s again.
The problem with bringing it back is, though, we've seen this so many times now, and it's not as shocking as it was in the late 70s.
Unless they really do go for, like, the weird talent.
Yeah.
If they really focus on the weird, it could be something different than America's Got Talent.
Because think of how many talent shows there are on TV right now. Yeah, yeah. I mean, not counting what American Idol used to be in those first opening rounds, which pretty much was the Gong Show.
Yeah, true, true.
You know, to bring William Hung out, he would have, you know, fit in.
Perfectly.
They would have had him on the Gong Show every week.
Yeah, yeah. He'd have been the new Gene Gene dancing machine.
Yes, yes,
he would have. Incidentally, did you know he was a double amputee? Because I didn't.
I think, yeah, I'd seen this back when it first
came out. Oh, okay, this is my first time seeing it. Anyway, back to the movie. I think my first hint that the at least the spy side of things was bullshit was the interviews with J.P. Morgan. Because she was clearly reading a script.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've seen enough of her on the Gong Show to know when she's, you know, talking off the top of her head. And she was reciting a script.
You know, I'm not sure either way still if it, his antics were real or not, you know? Because it's crazy enough to... Would anybody put it past the CIA to have done this, though?
Fair point, fair point. And I liked how he was an independent contractor. He wasn't actually an employee of the CIA.
Well, right.
Which means that it gives them complete deniability on every side.
Of course.
Yeah, and, it's never going to be confirmed.
That's how they would run a lot of this.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I mean, there's some stories that I seriously doubt happened, like him getting captured in East Berlin.
Right. And being kept as an exchange for another prisoner who happened to be the guy who won the dating game.
Right. I couldn't see any of that.
No, no. That was just too obviously bullshit. On the positive side about the movie, because I keep going on about how I don't believe any of it, I gotta say, Drew Barrymore, who I normally don't like, was well cast.
Oh, yeah.
The character she always played fit the character in the movie.
Well, I mean, the two of these movies together, I would love to see someone edit the two of them together, actually.
Yes.
Because Rockwell, holy shit.
Yeah. I didn't quite realize how good of an impersonation that was until the scene where he's actually hosting the Gong Show.
Well, I mean, just all of it. Just from seeing the whole movie last week to seeing this. And there were really times that I forgot that it was not actually Chuck Barris that we were watching.
I mean, there's a bit of a resemblance, but also just his impersonation was spot on, which I didn't really catch until that scene where he's hosting the Gong Show, because I've seen Chuck do that a million times.
The mannerisms, though, with like the mouth and the walk and stuff. I mean, he had it down entirely without being just an impersonation. I mean, he just really became Barris.
Yeah, impersonation is probably the wrong word.
So much so that they say the last couple lines of the movie are said from the real Chuck Barris. Yeah, yeah.
Which is very nice.
I'd assumed it was Rockwell saying that. Because they sounded so much alike.
No, I could tell it was Barris because you can't really fake the accent. I mean, Rockwell tried, but he didn't quite know the accent.
That was more stuff.
Because I have relatives in Philly. There's an accent
that
you can't quite fake. That Barris has, that Sam Rockwell got close, but he didn't quite get it. You know, he always sounded like Sam Rockwell to me.
I don't know. I completely lost him in the role. It was just, I mean, watching the actual guy last week and then watching him this week, it was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Drew Barrymore, there's a number of movies I've just loved her in, and she's, come on, she's always going to be Gertie to us.
Well, of course. Of course. I think that might be the last movie I liked her in.
But, she was just born to play this part, pretty much.
Speaking of casting and directors as well, David Fincher and Bryan Singer were both considered to direct. Singer initially accepted, but had to withdraw because the entire cast of X-Men 2 was available. Mike Myers, Ben Stiller, Johnny Depp were all considered for the role of Chuck Barris. Depp stayed on as an executive producer.
I could have seen Ben Stiller.
Yeah. Richard Dreyfuss was offered the role.
What?
This whole thing started in like 88, in the mid-80s.
Oh, okay.
They started working this script in the mid-80s, shortly after the book was published. Dreyfuss was offered the role, but refused to read the script because he believed Barris's morbid humor was distasteful. Russell Crowe, Kevin Spacey, and Ed Norton were also all attached to it at different times.
Wow.
And David O. Russell was offered to direct, but turned it down, deciding that it was just not about anything but a guy who liked to fuck girls and say that he shot people in the head. Which it kind of was.
Wow. That's an honest trailer, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I would love to have a recording of Russell saying that so I could put it with a trailer.
So, yeah, that's how Kaufman lost control of his script. Uh-huh. I think when he was saying that, yeah, it was like a 10-year process, mm-hmm. and then it was just kind of...
A bit more than 10 years. I'm pretty sure it was 88 that I remember reading.
That Kaufman himself would be writing it, you think?
Maybe I'm just thinking about when the movie first got rolling. But yeah, it wasn't long after that that Kaufman was involved, was brought in. And it really doesn't feel like a Kaufman movie at all.
Nah.
You know, his stuff, love it or hate it, is really signature, even his scripts. I normally love them, and this one was an exception, but that was due to Clooney's tampering, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, Clooney just, it was too Hollywood.
This was his first movie, to be fair. Yeah. It was his directorial debut. It just felt too staged.
Yeah.
You know, it was too cliche and too staged. The voiceover really bothered me, the narration. It's just too cliche.
I didn't have much of a problem with that, but I don't know, the portrayal of like the Gong Show, mm-hmm. You would think would be just nuts. Actually, from what you saw last week, it was fucking crazy, the stuff we saw from the Gong Show behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this movie, it looked very subdued.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that was done intentionally to like dispel, you know, the myth, or if that was more accurate, or if it was just Clooney really didn't know how to portray the chaos. Uh-huh.
And again, it was his first movie, you know, so I have to give him a little bit of a pass there, but it just felt very hackneyed.
Is this the only movie, the first movie we've had with Julia Roberts in it?
Very well, maybe.
In Zombie Takeout.
Also a rare case where I liked her in a movie, too, because I'm normally not a fan. But she was good for the role.
She was good in this, yeah.
I just saw the exact quote about the CIA. No official tie to any agency. So, you know, there's complete deniability. Also, with regard to Mean Gene's comments about Chuck Barris, he basically said Chuck was a great bullshit artist. So it really doesn't confirm anything in the movie. He said he could tell you anything and you'd believe it. And particularly unbelievable. Of course, Chuck was just a naturally brilliant marksman. You know, they put a gun in his hand and he's just got such a close pattern that there's pretty much a hole in the target. Also liked the fact that two of his buddies in CIA training were Jack and Lee.
What?
Jack Ruby, Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh. And was that one of his buddies that was the FCC guy?
Oh, that scene also. I think that was where I started to kind of doubt the veracity of the game show side, you know, the normal life side of things. Because the FCC guy would not be that intense.
Well, he was, you know, purposely trying to intimidate the people.
Perhaps. Like, he was practically a drill sergeant.
Well, right. I was wondering if that was one of his CIA buddies that he just
maybe
put the suit to talk to them to, like, Didn't think about that. Yeah, he was in. It was like either they tone it down, or he couldn't do the show anymore. So he was in a really bad situation there.
Also, the FCC guy said something about six submersive remarks, not subversive, submersive with an M instead of a V.
Huh.
I don't know if he just mispronounced the word and they left it in, or if it was meant to be some kind of joke. Submersive is not a word.
Right.
But, now, but with regard to the dating show, though, how could Chuck be stupid enough to think that those would make it to air?
It seemed like even from like the Gong Show stuff, like he was just willing to let anything fly and see if they would get it by the network guys. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, you know, he gave them fits.
Yeah, of course.
In the Gong Show.
Mm-hmm.
But
also that. Okay.
Well, the other thing about the movie itself that Barris has denied is the whole mother dressing him up as a girl, and the whole serial killer thing.
And I think that's why I really can't judge the story from the movie. I would have to read the book as well. Because I get the impression that they probably cut out a lot, and who knows what they changed.
And Barris claims it's a Kaufman thing, but that could have been a Clooney thing too. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. But like the speed of his rise through the ranks at NBC could have just been Clooney cutting things down.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to read the book to find that out. What did you think of the obvious nod to Apocalypse Now?
Oh, what the...
When they're in the bathroom in the two stalls and the camera pulls up and you see the fan spinning.
I was thinking more of the grotto or whatever. That scene was very Apocalypse Now, actually. With the girls swimming in the grotto. Uh-huh. It was more of a Willard and Kurtz kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah, I could see how you'd get an Apocalypse Now influence from this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that scene with the fan is straight out of Apocalypse Now, isn't it? You're more familiar with it than I am, but isn't there a scene like right above a fan?
Well, it begins with the helicopter blade turning into the ceiling fan.
That's what I'm thinking of, yes.
That's been too long. That's like the opening shot.
Yeah, that's the scene I'm thinking about, yeah. And the shot of it just over the bathroom stalls just really reminded me of that. Like, it had to be an obvious nod. Also, that clip from the Newlywed Game, completely legit. I've seen it before.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was actually on the show.
Well, I mean, I believe it. Some of these stuff, some of those clips they put in were real things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they used some real Gong Show clips in there. Like, mm-hmm. the kid singing, what the fuck was he singing again? Jamie Farr dancing around with the gongs.
Right, and the shot of them gonging, that was legit, yeah, obviously.
I love Deo, how he came up with the idea, with the auditions and...
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, like, did they just kind of gloss over the beginning of the Gong Show at that point? Because, they're already auditioning. Did. But then they show him coming up with the idea, and then they did gloss over the creation of it. They just have him coming up with the idea, and suddenly it's in production.
Well, right, they skipped over the part where he wasn't the host.
Yeah, yeah.
And which, think about it, if he's an assassin, there definitely should have been a, you should not fucking host this. You need to keep a lower profile.
Right. Also, I didn't realize he was so hated when he was doing the Gong Show. Like, people were calling him, like, the downfall of, civilization and all of this.
Oh, definitely.
I don't remember it from the time, because I was young, but...
That is definitely what added to the appeal, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
You have these stuck-up assholes, talking about how dangerous he is and everything. And of course, it was just like, oh, that's awesome. He's just doing this fucking goofy shit, and you think he's going to bring down Western civilization?
Yeah.
Because, the fallout of the dating game offensiveness was fucking hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the way it was done in the movie, I thought.
Yeah. The long table really shot with no.
Yes.
Reminded me of something from the Hudsucker Proxy.
Yeah. And then, of course, I'd say it gets a brain, or half a brain, for Rutger fucking Howe.
Oh, yeah.
you've got a cameo from Brad Pitt, which was funny, too. You've got, Julia Roberts.
And Matt Damon in that same scene. It was Matt Damon and Brad Pitt in the date. They were bachelors.
Yeah, the middle guy, the bachelor number two, looked familiar too. Mm-hmm.
And their names in the script were Bachelor Matt and Bachelor Brad.
But you know, you've got all of the star power, and then of course you bring in
Rutger fucking Hauer. As a CIA operative who apparently likes to have photos taken while he's killing somebody.
Yes.
And speaking of killing, when he walks out to the pool to talk with Clooney's character, why didn't he see all the blood at first?
Well, yeah, because it clearly wasn't there.
I mean, was he dripping while they were talking?
Like, none of us... You know, you couldn't see it until they revealed it.
No, I'm saying, I know they didn't show us, obviously, but why didn't Barris see it? And you know, why didn't he react until after the scene?
Yeah.
You know, scene ended and suddenly he sees the blood that's apparently been there the entire time.
It was a very strange scene.
Yeah. Also very strange was the really paranoid episode of The Gong Show, where he's got like a gun to the unknown comic's head and all that. And he walks out on stage and is like, they're coming to get me. That had to be a delusion.
Yeah.
If he'd ever put a gun to the Unknown Comic's head, I think it would have come out by now.
They may have just thought he was joking.
Perhaps, but in the scene, it's not played that way. Unknown Comic just goes along with it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call him Murray from now on if I reference him, because it's easier to say than Unknown Comic.
Well, I wouldn't know who you're talking about. Murray, I mean.
I don't remember his last name, but that's his real name. Murray something. I can't remember his last name offhand. He's completely open about it. He posts pictures of himself without the bag on and all that now.
Now, the time where Keeler, you know, commits quote unquote suicide, keep in mind that is around where the Gong Show movie takes place.
Right.
Now, you know what? I guess watching the movie last week is the reason why I'm still wondering if the CIA story is actually true. Uh-huh. Because think about what we saw in that movie about how, hey, Chuck, why are you so tired? Like, yeah. They kept mentioning that over and over again, and him being late, and like, oh, I just taped 5 episodes of The Gong Show, you know, yesterday.
Right.
It's like, well, yeah, you know, people do that shit, like, all the time, man.
Fair point.
And then,
but he wasn't used to being on camera. He was always a producer behind the scenes.
He takes a random trip to the Middle East just to be away from everybody?
Yeah, yeah.
Say, you don't think the CIA had any going dealings in the late 70s in the Middle East, do you?
Well, that's a good point. But also, that part of the movie wasn't supposed to be realistic, was it? We weren't supposed to believe he actually did that. That was a joke for the movie.
It was a joke, well... The explanation was he wanted to get away from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did take random trips like that, and he did disappear for just periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, for weeks. So,
it's just
those are facts, at least.
Yeah. The whole spy angle, at least in as it is in the movie, is just too perfect of a spy movie.
I agree. I don't think
it hits all of the dots, you know?
Right, I think the whole thing with the mole and stuff is bullshit.
Yeah. Also, was that poisoning scene supposed to be tense? You know, when he was supposedly poisoned? Because we know he lives.
Spoiler alert, Chuck Barris lives until, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. He lived well after that scene took place. So right. I don't know if we were supposed to believe he was actually dead.
You know, maybe Clooney was shooting for the audience that didn't quite know that he was still alive.
Yeah, oh, that's true, and which is probably a lot more people, you know, before he actually died.
Yeah.
Also, if a woman was found dead in a hotel room with a pen in her hand that had Chuck Barris's prints on it, I think that would have made news.
Right, that's the other thing, too. I'm like, you're telling me there are no fingerprints taken here?
Because he wasn't wearing gloves. And he wiped some stuff down quickly afterward, but he was touching that pen that he put in her hand.
And of course, the CIA suspected him of being a mole, the mole in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So they wouldn't just say, Chuck Barris found the mole and, you know, killed them. So
right.
it's all good. They would have probably made sure that he wasn't actually the bowl of salt. Right,
exactly. Although it did occur to me after watching the movie, if he really was a CIA operative, writing a really cliche spy story and calling it a memoir would be a nice way to deflect.
And calling it the unauthorized biography.
Exactly.
Even though he wrote it himself. Yeah, yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Yes. One great bit of casting, of course, in this. The network guy that you know comes in to tell him that it's canceled.
Mm-hmm. I didn't notice who it was.
Did he not seem like a dead ringer for the network guy in the Gong Show?
Oh, I think that's who he was supposed to be.
Yes, only he had like hair.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying blanking on his name.
He had a Beatles mop top for some reason. I don't know. It's 1982.
Yeah.
Or 81.
The film was spoofed by The Onion, entitled Movie Marketing as Six Different Genres, a romantic comedy, a spy thriller, a Hollywood satire, a straightforward biopic, a strange being John Malkovich-esque mind bender, and a chick flick.
another honest trailer.
Yeah, yeah. Although I think David O. Russell was a bit more honest. And, of course, the whole thing ends with a nice cameo from Chuck. It was great to see him.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about what he was saying about the Gong Show being just a callous way to cash in on the freaks, effectively, on these people with no talent.
Well,
maybe that's what it was intended to be. For me, it was always something more.
I think they miss a side of the Gong Show in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because that they hit on in the first movie, that last week's movie.
The one he actually wrote.
Right. That the majority of those people were not amateurs.
Right, right. They were weird, but they were legit talented.
They were, a lot of them were comedians themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Coming up.
Too.
And goofing.
Yeah.
And playing,
Yeah. As Bodo pointed out, P.B. Herman.
Yes. These were not like, serious people. Oh, I'm going to hit the big time with a lot of these things. These were people just coming up to do something weird with no expectations.
Right, just to see what happens.
Yeah.
Someone was talking about you destroying these people's lives. One of his critics in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was the girl in the grotto. That's who said it. You're destroying these people's lives. I don't remember anyone looking all that upset when they were gonged.
No.
They were kind of laughing and like, okay, that's cool.
But let's be honest. The majority of the Gong Show performers are people like the unknown comic or the dude with the fake mustache and the Viking helmet.
Yeah. They were comedians or they were regular people who just said, they just took the shot and okay, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, it was, it was very Andy Kaufman, exactly. Performance art.
As I mentioned last week, I always took it as celebrating the weird, not laughing at the freaks.
Well, there was an element of that too.
Yeah, there was.
There were people that believed that those were, and I'm sure there were some regular people thrown on there too for good measure. But, you had Chuck that'd be like, why? Why did you do that? It was so obvious, everybody in the room could not wait for that gong to be hit. My favorite part of last week's movie was the guy that was doing the chicken thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That he would, bring back on, and you could hear him, over, the miking, get the fuck out of here, you fucking loser. Pushing him off the stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, come back, they want you to do some more. And of course the whole thing of like, you didn't mean to give him a heart attack. And it was like, well, I don't know. I was just doing it for the laughs. So I can't really give a fuck about it.
So I'm done with my notes.
Same here.
On to sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes.
Barris was so enthusiastic with Clooney's work on the film, which is really funny after what we just talked about.
Right.
That he began writing Bad Grass Never Dies, the sequel to Confessions.
Wow.
Miramax also owns the rights to it, who put this out. Ferris filmed a cameo appearance of himself during the shoot in Canada and taped a voiceover at Clooney's house. So apparently they were looking to make Bad Grass Never Dies, the sequel.
Who knows how long that'll take if it took it took this movie 15 years to actually
get completed. Although there might be, what's the word I'm looking for, renewed interest now that Chuck is gone.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll see a sequel. I don't know what's really left to say.
After. I mean, a remake.
I mean, he lived a long time after that, but
yeah,
I don't know if it's really relevant to this. A remake?
If you were to remake this, what would you I mean, because The Onion hit the nail on the head. There are like six different movies.
Yeah.
In this one movie. Although the chick flick, I can't really see the chick flick part.
It's a stretch. I think they were just going for comedy there. And it's not that mind bending. It's not, you know, a Kaufman mind bender like Malkovich.
It kind of is, though, if what he's saying is true.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. In that sense, it is, yeah. Maybe because I knew this, what I knew the backstory going in, I didn't see it that way.
But okay, so there's still four films in here, at least, if you disregard the mind bender, because, I mean, we are in reality, at least, even if that is true.
Mm-hmm.
So, what would be the best way to remake it? Would it be just a spy thriller? Would it be... the spy thriller seemed a bit hokey, and it seemed...
Yeah, it was very cliche. But it's kind of the hook. No one would care that much about just a Chuck Barris biopic if he didn't say that he was a spy. that's what sold the movie.
And you do wonder, I mean, that is the cover for being the spy and the assassin, being the fool.
Right, exactly. You
know? Yeah. I mean, it is kind of something taken from classical literature where, you have the fool who's, really had the other side of the assassin, so much so that he confesses at the end what he is, and of course it's just received with the laugh when the truth comes out.
And think about how much classical literature Barris was quoting in the movie.
That's true.
Which, again, lends credence to he made it up. As far as remakes, I kind of want to see Kaufman do his thing with it.
Oh, yeah. Just
write and direct, go completely self-indulgent, see where he takes it.
Yeah, give it the being John Malkovich treatment.
Yeah.
I mean... I'd say Rockwell could even take the performance again, even though it's like 15 years later.
No, he still looks young.
He doesn't
really age. And I'm not really seeing anybody else, who was considered working. Dreyfuss would have been amazing if he was willing to do it. Obviously, because it's Dreyfuss.
That younger Richard Dreyfuss, although by the 80s, he was kind of a bit old for it.
Well, that's true. Yeah, but even by then he was,
by the late 80s.
Right. Trying to think, what was he doing in the late 80s? It was a little after Close Encounters. Like, Close Encounters was the year the book was written, I think.
I think Close Encounters was before that. I think that maybe was a little like 78.
Was it? I thought that was 80s. Anyway. I've got my browser open.
Kevin Spacey would have been really weird.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine that.
You're right. It was 77, Close Encounters. Spacey, especially in 88, like young Spacey.
Yeah, like wise guy.
Exactly, wise guy era.
Spacey.
I don't see that working. Let's see who else. Spacey, Russell Crowe, no.
Like, how did he get in there?
Generally, my opinion of Russell Crowe, no. Ed Norton could have been interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, of course, Ben Stiller, too. Yeah. In fact,
could pull it off, still, I think.
I was thinking we would do this movie sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking the companion movie that, before, of course, Barris had passed away.
Right.
Would have been the movie Permanent Midnight.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's also about, the background of a TV show kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, Ben Stiller was just amazing in that too.
And we're skipping over one that is probably the most laughable of all the actors considered. Mike Myers.
Oh, yeah. I don't understand that.
No. He was popular. It was probably right off the back of Austin Powers.
I mean, although he has put in some interesting acting performances when he's done straight roles.
I don't know that I've ever seen him in a straight role.
Like Studio 54. I'm trying to remember the other one he did. Where's more of a serious...
On to Brains?
On to Brains.
Overall, you know, I didn't buy the story. It could have been good, but the movie was just... The direction was just way too cliche. The spy story was too cliche. Though that's more on Barris than Clooney. I gotta go 3.5. The acting was really solid. That's about all I can give it.
I'd say the acting was solid. The story is compelling as hell. And I enjoyed the hell out of it. I'm going 4.
All right. And what have you learned?
Yeah, if the road to hell is paved with good intentions, then what is the road to heaven paved with? Creplock?
And I learned that I never want to be a stagehand.
What do you mean? That was always cool being a stagehand.
The line in the movie about the stagehand who committed suicide.
Oh, I mean, come on. That was the dumbest cover story he could have come up with.
Yeah.
Because she... As a, you know, announcer for the Gong Show on occasion.
Would have known him.
Would know the stagehand.
Yeah. I was half expecting her to say, oh, no, not Gene.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah. All right. So until next time, when we'll be reviewing Gothic. A bit of a change of pace there.
Yeah. And now for something completely different.
Yeah. Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoy the show, spread the word, give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, in order up through Warcraft, which I just added over the weekend when I finally saw the movie. It took me months to see that, and I'm a WoW addict. That's something somewhere in the 320s. I realized also when I added that we might be missing a trick by putting Reefer Madness in the Moral Panic trilogy. We should have saved it for 420. You also
that find... we'll have to have Cheech and Chong.
Oh yeah, there we go. That'd be better. Or the one with Dave Chappelle. I can't think of the name of it. The one with Bob Saget.
Something like that. We'll pretend we're smokers at that point.
And of course, the recommendations list. It was close.
Yes.
You know, the performances were great, especially Rockwell. I just couldn't get past the cliche.
Seriously, Rockwell should have won an Oscar for this. What the fuck? I don't know what else was going on that year in 03. I'm trying to remember who was the darling.
Mm.
But this performance by Rockwell is just freakish.
Yeah. Of course, you can email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 401-436-8ZTL1 or for the alphanumerical challenge.
You can go fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Rest in peace, Mr. Barris.
Yes.
In the ass?
Before we get to no, there's nothing.
I don't know. I was just doing it for the laughs, so I can't really give a fuck about it. So.
Hold on one second. I forgot to put something in my notes.
Oh.
For sequels and remakes.